Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of my podcast. We have very special guest today joining all the way from Sri Lanka. We got Akash Sunet Kumara joining the podcast. Hi Akash.
Hey John, how's it going, man?
Oh, I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. Nice to finally be on the podcast.
Right. Yeah. So how is Sri Lanka these days, Akash?
Is that a topic we really need to go into? I mean, the weather is nice. It's warm, sunny, right. You know, the usual beginning of the year. Not too bad. Right. Politically, let's not go there. COVID also, let's not go there.
Right.
But, you know, it's just another day. And we keep doing what we do. We keep surviving. Yeah, man. How's it over? You are in the Philippines, right?
Yeah, I mean Philippines. So I think things are actually getting better. We actually had like almost a 2-year lockdown. But yeah, and I see friends in Sri Lanka complaining like when there's a lockdown for a couple of months, we've been there for like 2 years. So, and things are getting better and you know, things are opening up and it looks promising. Just want to ask you, how did the pandemic affected your work? Like what you were doing?
We had just shot Night Out, right? This was in 2020, January. Right. And we were already in post-production when, shit hit the fan. So we were indoors anyway. So that kind of like limited us from going around and doing all that. But once you're in post-production on a movie, you know, you spend most of the time indoors. So that didn't really affect it in that sense, but it made things quite difficult for, you know, communication, like, directing a movie doesn't necessarily stop once the camera stops rolling. So even into post-production, you're like, sometimes you need to go to maybe the VFX artist's place, maybe, you know, have a one-on-one discussion, like with the sound designer, like you just need to be in the same room, and that kind of limited us. But besides that, you know, we were already in post-production, so that didn't necessarily affect it all too bad, but we wanted to shoot more stuff afterwards, and that's when, you know, we realized, okay, now things are, it's not as easy as it was. We took freedom for granted, and we kind of paying the price, but you know, it was something that affected everybody. But try to make the most out of it, because Junkyard Theory was born during the pandemic while we were, you know, holed up inside, and there was nothing left to do. We realized the whole world was suffering from it. So it was like, okay, might as well reach out to some of my contacts and see if they're willing to go live, you know, give the audience something educational to listen to. And that's how that started. So it's been productive. The pandemic has actually been productive, which is not something, you know, you can say that all that often. But yeah, we've been doing the best we can. Huh?
Right. So, yeah. As we were talking before we start recording, your friend Danuka is the one who actually introduced me to Junkyard Theory. That's how I got to know you, and then got connected in Facebook, because we've been talking in Clubhouse about movies and Netflix stuff, and mostly about TV series and stuff like that. So I was quite impressed when I saw like what you were guys doing, like the shorts and stuff, because I really love the short movie concept. Akash, do you know the channel Dust?
Yes, the sci-fi short film. Yeah.
So I've been like, sometimes I get into Dust and keep on watching, like after like, you know, 20 videos. It's really amazing how the short can be very, compared to a 3-hour movie or 2-hour movie. This in few minutes, it gives you so much value, right?
100%. Yeah. I mean, we had a Sri Lankan movie up on Dust. I think it's Sandun Senaviratna's short movie called Vikari was on Dust. That's a really great channel where you can, you know, find some amazing content. You have Crypt TV for horror. Maybe we have one of our short movies spent up there. But yeah, the short movie thing is, I think it's catching on. It's more prevalent than, it's more popular than it used to be.
Right. I want to ask you, what was the reason really like attracted you to shorts? Like, you mostly work on shorts. So What was the reason?
I never wanted to do shorts. I wanted to do feature films, but with the resources and you know the scope of things, shorts was like the way to go because things were like so limited back when I started. But you know, short films provided this. It provided a very unique experimental ground where you could test out things, see where you were good at. Like for me to figure out, like, okay, what was I good at? What kind of stories was I able to tell through short movies? Like discover what kind of stories kind of like worked with the particular audience. Because like, you know, we started making short films, particularly like primarily in English. And although it got us kind of got us out of the country, out of the island, and you know, into San Diego Comic-Con, all of that, into other festivals and everything, our content didn't necessarily resonate with the Lankan audience. And right. It was not until Night Out, where you know one of our productions kind of went into the public sphere and caught the eye of the general public. So that was because we kind of amalgamated Sri Lankan culture and you know did it partially in Sinhala. So
right.
Again, experimental. So it was you know, short films have been this place where we also focus on how do you call it? So with every short film, what we do is we try to take one or two different aspects of filmmaking. Like maybe like say, okay, we're going to focus on you know, getting the sound right in this particular short film, and at the same time, we're trying to see how we can choreograph a fight scene a bit differently and capture it in a more dynamic manner. So we try to level up on the technical aspects of filmmaking with each and every shot, so thereby trying to level up our skills with each production. And you can't necessarily do this on a feature film because I mean, for us, like for a feature film, there's too much at risk. And right. With short films, I'm not saying there's not enough risk. There's not a lot of risk, but there is. It just, you know, it's something you can go in there, do it quickly, and come out of it with hopefully not too much damage. You don't have to make the same mistakes on a feature. So we try to exhaust our mistakes on short films rather than taking it to feature film. I mean, we're pretty sure by this time, you know, you're going to make bigger mistakes or something on feature film. You'll undoubtedly make mistakes. You can't really stop that. But
right.
it's been a good testing grounds.
So, yeah, I mean, mistake is how you learn, really, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, since I started making short films in 2015 with the team, it's become easy, I would say, because, you know, film equipment and all that, like, it's more widely available. I still don't own a camera, man. I still don't own a camera myself. We pretty much either borrow or rent our film equipment. And pretty much everyone has it. It's become democratized, like even the smartphone, that way, you know. I'm still using the smartphone. I don't even have a proper webcam. I'm using my smartphone to connect to Droid Cam, and that's how I've been doing the junkyard theory sessions also. So things have become easier.
right. Actually, what I realize is it's not really the tools,
it's
the content, right? It's the message and it's the content. So as long as you focus on that, I think the tools eventually tools will get improved. You will be able to afford some of the, you know. Yeah, so keep doing what you're doing, right?
100%. Right. So, it's never the tools.
Right. So, Akash, tell me a little bit about your childhood and what's your earliest memory of like a movie or TV? What's your earliest memory?
So, I grew up in a household where, you know, watching martial arts movies from the 80s and 90s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Right. It was like, you know, pretty normal. You hear Bruce Lee's Kiais and, you know, Van Damme doing the splits. You see that like on a daily basis because my dad, he's a martial artist. He's like one of the senior most martial artists in the country. He used to have his own dojo out there in Oman where I used to be when I was a kid. And I mean, I owe most of my film mania to him. He's the person who kind of, you know, planted that seed in there.
Right.
And we used to watch, I mean, I used to watch pretty much everything. And every, you know, seeing all these action movies, everything was larger than life. And you have this aspect to them, like this whole other dimension of escapism from everyday life. And I loved that. Like, for some reason, the whole hero aspect of it, the whole action dynamic, the storytelling, everything was just pure entertainment. And I realized early on, like, I'm an artist by nature. I used to draw, I used to paint back when I was a kid, and I was like, this is the pathway that I wanna get into someday. I didn't know back then that I wanted to do filmmaking when I was a kid, but somehow that fostered and it grew through school. Like, you know, I used to be in dramas and all of that. And yeah, eventually, I mean, I did science in school, or at least I was forced to, because they don't really encourage you to, you know, take up arts as a career pathway. But my parents were, you know, really supportive of everything. Like, what my dad always said was, whatever you do, you know, just it's fine. Just make sure you go to the very extreme and, like, try to master whatever skill it may be. Even if it's carpentry, like, don't become a doctor, you know, you're going to kill your patients, or don't become an engineer if you're going to destroy your building. So, right. Yeah. And I actually got the chance to, you know, experiment with filmmaking after I left school. But I did it with the team, the people that I met during school, who are, you know, rightly so named the high school junkies. So yeah, that's it briefly in a nutshell.
Right. I recently started watching all these, you know, sort of action movies. I went through like all the Rambo movies, and
yeah,
I feel like I remember when I was like watching that Rambo First Blood, you know, I only remembered the action of it, right? Before. Mm. But now when I was watching it, it was kind of emotional for me to watch it, because that movie is really a great movie, mm-hmm. right? And then they were talking about a social problem of like the returning Vietnam vets. We didn't see that when we were watching it back then, because we probably didn't understand it, right? Mm. But now it's really, there was this last scene on First Blood, like, I almost cried. Like,
where he's being escorted into the police car, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. But see, that's the amazing thing. Like, you can enjoy that as a child. Like, you know, the action aspect of it, you can enjoy that as a child. And then as an adult, you realize, okay, there's more. There are more layers to this story. Right. It hits on a different level, like you said, emotionally. So that's what movies can do to you. Like, they transport you into an entirely different world for however long they run. And, you know, you can escape into it for a little while and then come out of it feeling, hopefully feeling refreshed.
Right. So the martial artist aspect. So what sort of martial artists do you practice?
So from martial arts, my dad practiced Shotokan karate, which is, you know, you see these nunchucks over here.
All right. Yeah.
I've been like swinging that stuff around since 4. So yeah, martial arts have been like a very integral part of life. You know, you start training as a kid, that sticks with you for life, and you have the Mokken Jung there also. You see that right there. So, yeah. So karate has been like, you know, again, a way of life. And you know, recently, having watched the whole Cobra Kai series, I rewatched it with my folks.
Right.
So that's very, nostalgic, you know, having grown up watching the Karate Kid series and everything. But yeah, so dad practiced Shotokan Karate. They passed it on to me and my brother, and I've been practicing it as often as possible. And that's kind of, you know, integrated into the filmmaking side of things also, because I wanted to the film. You've seen the films that we've done, it's mostly action and choreographing fight scenes, all of that. Like, it's helped, like, the martial arts side of it has helped not only in terms of choreographing, but also in terms of, you know, getting something to the very end. Like, in martial arts, like you don't necessarily give up. You hold on up until like the last moment. You keep pushing and pushing. Like the discipline side of things has definitely helped with filmmaking. Like I see so many people, they start something and they don't necessarily go to the very end. They don't finish it up. So you, if you are a filmmaker, you need that resilience and the whole ability to hold on. And then you, right, go up until the very end. You got to get it done. So that grit, I guess, it's been really really helpful too.
Yeah, you heard that story. There was this Korean TV series, The Squid Game.
Yes.
Right. The guy actually wrote that story. Like he had that film for like 10 years until Netflix pick it up. Right. So that's resilience, right? Like don't giving up.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've been doing this for the last six. It's coming up on seven. The last 6 years, and we haven't necessarily done filmmaking for the money or for the numbers. You were talking about YouTube and numbers, all of that. So I mean,
right,
it hasn't been necessarily like the return. There hasn't necessarily been much of a return besides, you know, getting our names out there and getting our films out there. And, improving our skills, and we do it because we love it. And when you love something, you just keep at it, no matter what, right? So
right,
yeah.
So Akash, you mentioned about the like the 80s movies and stuff like that. But which filmmakers did you like really got you inspired? Like, did you started noticing the directors and you know all these people who make movies? Who did like inspired you really or influenced you?
This is a tough question, and the answer kind of changes, you know, with time. Like if you asked me this the same time last year, I probably would have given you like a different set of names, and maybe this time next year, I'll give you like a different set of names.
Right.
But, you know, you look back on it, like every movie that you watched, you realize you pick up different elements, different aspects from every movie. So every single person who made the movies that we watched has kind of contributed to, you know, our filmmaking throughout the years. But to answer your question, like I kind of noticed it, like with I guess Tarantino and Spielberg. Like Kill Bill was such an influential movie in terms of, you know, putting in like it pays homage to so many genres, subgenres, puts in martial arts with, you know, spaghetti westerns. Like Tarantino does like all the weird stuff. And then you have Spielberg, who caters, like, you know, he creates movies for like people of all ages. Like it's, his movies are pretty universal. And later on, it was more, you know, like I love Nolan. I love his storytelling, like the whole mind bending aspect to it. And of course, Soderbergh, because he takes a very guerrilla approach. He used to work in the studio system, and then he starts shooting movies with an iPhone, you know, going very guerrilla style and creating stuff very, very rapidly, all that. So yeah, if I had to pick names, it would be them, and of course Gareth Evans from The Raid in terms of action.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, those are the names off the top of my head right now, but you know, there's so many more who inspired what I do. And maybe if you ask me to like, you know, list that, we could go on and on, but I'll stop from there.
Yeah, because I actually watched today, I watched Death Proof of Tarantino.
Ah.
My God, that's an amazing movie. What I love about Tarantino is, like, I think it's kind of like you also, because he's in this movie, right? Somehow he's there in the movie.
Somehow,
right?
He's there.
Yeah, so, and he's it's not like just a cameo, but he's a good actor as well, right? He just really personified those characters.
My favorite cameo from Tarantino was in Planet Terror, right?
Planet Terror, Robert Rodriguez.
Zombie. Right. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, actually, Death Proof was part of Grindhouse. Yes. It was a double feature, right? That exploitation thing. And
yeah,
and what the Death Proof, actually, they made those, like, you know, those flickerings and, like, the audio gets like it's not in sync.
Glitchy,
those, I think,
yes,
they purposely made those things, right, to make it like exploitation.
Exactly. Exactly. They pay homage to, you know, the movies that they grew up watching.
Right.
And that's beautiful. You know, them trying to emulate the imperfection of movies, like you said.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. Yeah.
Right. And I think he's going to make only one more movie, right? And then he's going to retire.
Yeah, that's what we've been hearing, right? He wants to stop at film number 10.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's Kill Bill 3, but kind of hoping, you know how sequels are, right? You know, you have a film series that ended 20 years back and then you pick up later and then the sequel doesn't turn out to be that all that great. So I'm hoping if he does it, it'll be a good send-off. But yeah, maybe he'll surprise us. Who knows?
Yeah, I think what you mentioned, the Cobra Kai, I think they really picked up the essence of the original movie, right? And then they're
doing it better.
Yeah, they did it really nice because they actually bring the real characters in, the same actors, and the actors are old, and they made the story really nicely, right?
Yeah. That's being, that's being respectful of the original material and at the same time putting a new spin on it. Like, they still respect, you know, what came before. And I think that's the main thing, like, why the series is successful. Like, the characters haven't gone, they have gone through major changes. But in a sense, they are still who they are. You can still identify and connect with those characters on a real world basis.
Right.
They're doing it really well. I'm excited for season 5.
Right. Yeah, the worst thing of watching everything, binge watching, is that you have to wait for the season 5, right?
Yeah. Netflix makes us have no patience.
Right. So Akash, the short that really got recognized is Eidetic, right? So can you tell me about it? So you had a lot of success with that.
Yes, that was the first publicly released short film we did. We did one more before this, and we never released it publicly. So it's in our vault of shame.
Right.
And like, as long as I have a charge of lock and key, I'm not putting that out, but the team kind of wants to. That's where we kind of, you know, learn the ropes. But yeah, Eidetic was the first publicly released short film that kind of got us recognized. Didn't really expect it to, you know, go as far as it did, because after the film was released, we released it. I distinctly remember we released this on the 16th of December, 2017.
Mm.
And we put it out and we submitted it to film festivals. And we usually forget about it after, you know, submitting. We don't really look out for, like, when's the announcement date, when is that happening, all of that. We just move, once we are done with the project, we move on to the next one. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, the festival emails started coming in that it was selected. And that was very surprising, because we did this on a budget of $300 back in the day. And that was, like, you know, pretty much a no budget. And the big one came while I was actually I was actually in the bathroom. I got an email from Comic-Con.
Right.
And that was, you know, like, that was really shocking. Like, San Diego Comic-Con is, like, the biggest comic convention in the world. So didn't really expect much, you know, after submitting to it. And then when the email came, I did a double take, spent an extra 10 minutes on the toilet seat, and then called Kasun, our cinematographer. And I told the news to him. Like, he didn't believe it at first. And then, you know, we called Shenik, who did the score on that one, and Steffi, who did the main role. And it was a very shocking moment for the all of us, and took a couple of days to properly, you know, settle in. And then somehow we made our way out there, and that was our first venture, you know, like out of the country with our first short film, which was, you know, I think we were lucky on that one. Like, we targeted the right film festivals, I guess, because a movie in the same genre as Eidetic, it's not something that you could submit to Sundance. The big festivals, they're not so welcoming of, you know, genre films as much. Like, they have their own style of programming. And yeah, this was actually my master's thesis project. So I did my master's with Train Dance Film School. And this was the thesis project, and it ended up being screened at the film festival in 2017. as well. So editing got quite a lot of international attention. And, you know, gradually it kind of, I guess, it propelled us to do more. Like, it's always nice to get recognized by festivals. But in, you know, ever since then, we've kind of dialed down on submitting to festivals because of the whole premiere policy and all that. But yeah, still, you know, it's I can't watch it. I can't, none of us can really watch that movie anymore because we realize we've come a long way from that, and everything about it right now seems a bit cringy.
Right.
To us. It didn't seem that way back when we were making it, but I can't watch our old movies, man. It's I don't know. It's a thing, but we're really proud of it. You know, we're really proud of how far it's enabled us to come. That was like the foundation. So yeah, doing that movie was, you know, quite an experience. Like, we didn't realize how big it was, in the sense, like, for a short film, we kind of tackled a lot within that. Like, normally short movies, they revolve around one specific incident taking place in like a very limited location, but with Identic, we were just, you know, hopping around. Like, you have quite a lot of locations, like a lot of different scenes in that movie if you take a look. So yeah, and yeah. I guess, you know, ignorance is bliss, and we didn't know that much about filmmaking back in the day, so it enabled us to just go out there, take that daredevil dive into it, and it just sort of materialized.
Yeah, and then yeah. They had some good fight scenes, right?
That was the most fun part, man.
Right.
It was two days of shooting against the clock. We had like we had to wrap up before 6 because you know, the sun goes down, and we didn't have any lights. We were shooting on natural lighting.
Right.
Shooting with natural lighting, and yeah, and both me and Steffi, we had torn our hamstrings the day before because there was a chase scene, and you don't see this in the film because we couldn't complete shooting it. Because both of us tore our hamstrings running on the road like idiots. All right. And we somehow wrapped our thighs with, you know, bandage, applied whatever balm, and decided, okay, we'll scrap the chase scene. We'll dive into the fight scene because that's what's necessary to, you know, tell the story. And so we did.
Right. So, Akash, you mentioned earlier The Night Out, which you said that had more sort of a local, more responses from local. And what I loved about it is, like, you know, you had that sort of choreographed sort of fight scenes or something, like, you know, that and loved also what music you used there. So it was a great choice. And tell me about that one, Night Out.
So initially the concept started out, it came from Kasun and Chenik. I can't remember which one of the two guys pitched it, but it came from them. It wasn't an idea that came up in my head. They were like, you know, by that time, we had done two other horror films at the same, you know, and we were kind of itching to get back into action. And they suggested, let's do another fight scene. Let's do another action scene. Let's try to choreograph it to music. Like, let's do a fight scene to the beat. That's what they came up with. And that idea snowballed and became Night Out. I said, you know what? That's cool. We can do that. Initially, the film was going to be called Fight Rhythm because we didn't have a name for it. Mm. I think we didn't have a name for it up until like a few days before shooting. And I said, let's see if we can put some chess in there. Let's try to connect chess, because to me, like, that's my favorite board game. I love chess, the whole strategic aspect of it. Like, you have these pieces which are different characters on their own. Like, they, every single piece moves uniquely, and, you know, it's something that I hadn't necessarily seen done on screen before. So if I was like, if we could connect chess with martial arts action, that would probably result in something unique. And it was a bit of work to convince the guys, but somehow they came on board. And then, you know, all these other aspects, the whole Lankanizing aspect of it, the, you know, the costumes, the music, everything came on later. The project evolved with every single day that passed. And we decided, all right, you know what, let's try including something Sri Lankan into it. Because when I started doing research about chess, I realized, like, you know, the game started in, you know, within the South Asian region around India. And before it went to Spain, I was assuming this, right? Before it went to Spain, to Europe, through the Middle East, it probably came down here. Like, obviously, if it was in India, it would have come down here. Like, take a look at any disease. You have it in India, few weeks later, it's here. It would have been the same, and we probably didn't preserve it as well. So probably chess was here in Sri Lanka, maybe, who knows, maybe it originated here, I don't know. And I was like, let's see if we can, you know, Lankanize those chess pieces, find something Sri Lankan in them. So the horse, the knight became a tusker, and the king and queen took on, you know, Lankan forms. The priest became a monk. Yeah, that was actually like Theraputtave. I was thinking, okay, it would be like a fighting monk, sort of. And then you had the pawns, the castle, the rook. We were trying to base the rook off of Sigiriya, but somehow the design just didn't work. And then we kind of took a look at, you know, the Dalada Marigava, the Pattirippu, and then we decided, okay, maybe that would be like a design that would suit this chessboard more. So the whole design aspect, we had Roshan and his helper working on it, and then Shanique was suggesting that we, you know, choreograph the fight scene to a specific BPM. We didn't have a track back then. We had only a BPM, like a metronome going, and we choreographed to that. And then the swords came in later. Kasun designed them. I still have the swords over there in that corner. That's the three-way chessboard. You know, like, there was a whole lot of design. It took around 4 months of pre-production before we decided, okay, we are ready to shoot this. Nipunika came on board for the costume design. And then once we had done shooting, we edited it to the metronome again, to the same BPM. And then Shanique suggested, let's get High Clown on board to, you know, do the score. Right. Previously, our scores were done by Ruud Hermans from the Netherlands. We are working with him on temporal as well. But for this specifically, we needed someone with that Sri Lankan touch, and iClown came in. And I did not expect the whole the Gajaga Vannam to come in there. That was all him. He saw the Tusker and somehow connected Gajaga with it and did that whole remix of it. And yeah. And later we decided, okay, you know what? Movies internationally, they usually have a soundtrack that goes with the movie. So let's try creating something like that. Let's go all out. I know we don't necessarily have a big story or anything. It's just around 8 minutes, but let's go all out since we came this far. And then Shanique created this awesome track, and it ended up becoming Vankarata, with, you know, the rapper Ravi J coming in and doing his magic. So that was, you know, that was a very concise and complete project from back to back. If you take a look at it. And it taught us a lot, not just about filmmaking, but also about marketing and putting something out there. So definitely those lessons have stuck with us, and hopefully they're going to be applied in future projects. So it's certainly applied in Temporal. But yeah, it was our most successful project to date. And we never got to submit it to festivals because of the whole COVID situation. But yeah, man, that's something I'm proud of. I'm very proud of.
Right. When I was watching that, I was actually sort of thinking, where can I get that sort of a chessboard? Because it is so awesome, right?
We wanted to, you know, create models of those and put it up for sale, because so many people asked us.
Right.
Never really got around to it. might do it again.
Right. Akash, how... I didn't really ask you about this. Was there anybody from the Sri Lankan film scene that you got influenced by or you like?
Not necessarily, man. I mean, it's quite unfortunate to say this, but I, to be honest, like I, don't watch anything that comes out of Sri Lanka all that much. I used to, like back then, like, you know, you had these amazing dramas like Dandubasnamane, Akala Sandhya back in the day. And I really enjoyed that. Even like some of the black and white movies, you know, you see them occasionally, like you realize they have so much more cinematic value and the execution is like really better. And then you wonder like what happened in the recent past.
Right.
And it's unfortunate. So in terms of local filmmakers, not much, right? Like two of the movies that I remember that I really loved watching in the theater were Suriyaran and Abba. I still remember those two movies, but besides that, not all that much.
Right. Yeah, actually, to be honest, we are not even hearing any about any movies right now, right?
That is unfortunate. And yeah. I mean, you can do so much over here in Sri Lanka. Like the reason we were able to pull off Identic on $300 and Night Out was how much in terms of trying to see 180,000 Sri Lankan rupees, which I think it's under $1,000. You said, yeah, it's under $1,000. So you can get so much done for so little. In Sri Lanka, like we were talking about earlier, it's not the equipment. Yes, sure. If you are, you know, going to shoot this with cinema cameras and all that, that will exponentially increase the budget. But if you really want to tell a good story and all that, the equipment and resources don't necessarily have to stand in your way. What I find is that we have the resources now. Like in Sri Lanka, you have cinema cameras ranging from the Red to the Arri. You have all of that. You have all the filmmaking equipment you need. What we kind of lack, I guess, from in the industry is the right attitude, I guess. So, yeah.
And I was also quite surprised. There's also a lot of people with the skills that you need now in Sri Lanka, right?
There's so many people who are talented. Like, you know, you look at people from the art side of things, the art departments, people, the actors, like you have good people like who can perform. It's just the stories that come their way are not necessarily up to standard. I mean, what is an actor supposed to do? Like, you know, if you have only slapstick comedy, historical dramas, and, you know, I guess that's pretty much it. That's the range of the Lankan industry in the recent past. Slapstick comedy and... recently, they've gone into the adult side of things, which maybe you need that, but I don't know.
at least they should do it right way, right? Even those, at least. That's the problem.
that's the thing. The execution, like you look at it and you see, okay, like the bare minimum in terms of technical execution is not been achieved. And I mean, I don't think this is something we should, you know, talk and like laugh at. It's something that we should look and see how can we kind of fix this, because the world is progressing at a very rapid rate. I mean, even from where you are in the Philippines, I'm pretty sure like y'all have pretty good stories, like maybe even Netflix original. I don't know about the Philippine catalog. Maybe they do have, you know, Netflix originals being commissioned from the country. And like, just take a look at our neighboring India. They're doing so well.
Yeah.
And we can too. And at the rate the world is going, we are being left behind, and this should not happen. I mean, making films to, you know, you have so many filmmakers making movies over here to put into festivals for the awards. That's fine if that's your thing. I mean, art house cinema, no, like it's not necessarily my thing, but I can respect it. Like, you know, there's a way that you can, like, there are stories that need to be told, but putting the whole sob stories that happen in the country out there in expectations of getting awards, I don't think that's necessarily right, because there's a story that I tell my friends whenever they, you know, ask about like how do people in the States see Sri Lanka. Like I got into this Uber cab with the driver was he was an African guy who was living in LA, and he had, you know, he visits film festivals frequently, so the guy knew a thing or two about Sri Lanka. I thought he knew a thing or two. And then, you know, we were talking about films and everything. I told him I was a filmmaker. He was interested, and he was asking more and more. And he asked, like, you know, so where do you work? I said, I was lecturing at this place in Colombo. I was like, oh, Colombo, so that's, is that a village? I'm like, it's a city. He literally stops, right? He stops the car in the middle of the road, takes it off to the side, stops the car, looks at me, and he's like, you have cities? Because all he had seen through movies that went into festivals over there in the States was, you know, were movies that portrayed Sri Lanka as this Mad Max type wasteland.
Right.
With only villages where a kid gets raped every 12 minutes, where a mom and child, they have some weird relationship. I mean, these are the stories that are going outside the country. And I'm like, that's not Sri Lanka.
Right.
Yeah, sure, we do have that dark aspect, but there's so much more. People don't even know we have cities, man. It's sad. And I think as filmmakers, we have a certain responsibility about how we portray the country to the rest of the world. And that's what we are trying to do with our films as well, like show something more. Like, film is first and foremost, well, I believe it's entertainment, so it has to entertain the audience. And this, you know, no matter whether you are creating a tragic storyline or a comedic storyline, there's a certain way you can, you know, execute it. And that's not to say that, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way, but if you are, you know, if you are sending your films out of the country, you need to keep in mind you are representing, your product is representing the entire country if it gets selected.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, this podcast also, Akash, came to be because of the pandemic. Because
really?
Yeah. So before this, I used to go to a lot of concerts before the pandemic. Like 2019, I think I went to 61 shows, 61 concerts.
I can see the posters behind you and the collection of CDs.
Yeah. So then, you know, when 2020 happened, I couldn't go. I could only go to 8 shows in 2020. And 2021, none, right? So then I thought of, you know, maybe I was feeling kind of down because of all these things. And then I thought maybe I should just start talking to my friends who used to go to concerts with me. Let's like go and talk about all these memories and all the experience we had. Nice. This actually started as that. We were just doing Zoom calls on that. And then I thought, maybe why don't I make it a podcast? And nice. and then bands and artists also wanted to come join the conversation. And then it just grew from there.
That's amazing. So
I know that your Junkyard Theory is also something similar. So tell me about Junkyard Theory and some of the interesting guests you had.
So I started Junkyard Theory with my mentor, David Wood. He's the guy who directed the original Kickboxer. And he was a cinematographer on Bloodsport. So I met him while I was doing the Rain Dance Masters. He was in the same program and we got connected online. And, you know, when I went to the States, we met and we've been in touch ever since. He's been great. But he was the first person that I reached out to when I got the idea, like I was going to go live. And I asked him, David, do you want to, you know, do like a filmmaking 101 webinar sort of thing? And he was immediately on board. So we started, that was the first episode, and we started on Instagram. Junkyard Theory was again like a name that came up a day or two before we went live. We come up with the whole junk thing is like, it's like a recurring theme, you know, the junkies, Junkyard Theory. Yes. It's yeah. And you know, using David's name, I kind of pitched to the other guests who I wanted to have on the show. I was like, okay, David's come on board before. Do you guys want to come? And then I used their names and I was like, you know, it was about getting guests and then utilizing the people's names who had come before in order to pitch and get more guests. So this process, you know, it continued. We had Paul Hirsch, who was the editor on the original Star Wars movie. We had a couple of a few Academy Award winners as well. Don Sylvester, he was a sound designer on Ford versus Ferrari. John Tall, cinematographer from Braveheart, The Last Samurai. But yeah, and then we had Louis Leterrier. He directed the Transporter movie, the first two movies, The Incredible Hulk, Clash of the Titans, Now You See Me. Simon Berry, he was a producer on Netflix's Warrior Nun. And we also had some Sri Lankan representation. Bernard White, who's a Sri Lankan-born actor, he was in The Matrix.
Right. Actually, from Jankathiri, yeah. I only knew that he's a Sri Lankan-born. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. He's amazing. And we had my friend Ruanga Samak. He did the ending title track for Fast Five. And he joined Jankathiri as an executive producer. So up until today, we've had around 52-53 guests. There's one special episode from that we did in collaboration with Warner Brothers that's due to come out with the costume designers from Dune, and that probably it'll be out by the time this episode is released. Right. So yeah, it's been a run, man. I mean, I didn't expect it to grow to this level. I didn't expect it to come this far, and it has. It's, you know, we. The podcast kind of branched off into an educational arm as well, where we started, you know, film courses, where because we realized there's an audience who wants to learn filmmaking. We eventually shifted, you know, our podcast from Instagram to Facebook Live, and now it's, you know, it's going on. It oscillates between going live and some sessions are recorded. The main thing is, you know, I have this personal curiosity about how movies were made, the ones that I love, which is what I do. Like, I watch a movie, if I like it, I go and, like, you know, do a bit of reading on how the movie was made, who was involved in the process, and if the film really struck a chord with me, I'd see if I could reach out to, you know, whoever and see if I can get them on the show, because I want to know how they pulled off certain things, and those are like I said, I want to satisfy that curiosity. So it's a learning process for me, and it's something I want to share with people, which is why this happens live on Facebook also. So I wish I had something like this growing up to, you know, learn filmmaking. And since I didn't have it, this is my way of, you know, giving back to society, where I'm like, okay, here's what I didn't have. Take it. Use it. It's free. It's free for everyone. Like, you can go access it anyway. It's up on YouTube. So yeah. That's the story of Jankathiri.
Yeah. So the other part, even what I'm realizing doing this, is we are sort of preserving stories that, you know, oh, we are putting up stories that was never, they never talk about it anywhere else. Especially, like, I had this couple of Sri Lankan artists who were in the 70s, like, they were big in the 70s, but they, when I check, they don't have a single interview on YouTube. It's the only the one they did with me, and I'm quite glad that I was the person to do it, because I'm preserving, like, you know, part of the Sri Lankan music history, right? Like,
exactly. Yeah. And that's amazing, because some people don't really get the spotlight that they deserve.
Right.
And what you are doing, that's really amazing, because it's pretty much the same thing we try with Jankathiri also. We have people from almost all departments are working on a film, like, coming in and, you know, talking about it, because, like, when you see the promotional materials for a movie, it's either the cast or the directors and maybe the cinematographer talking about it, but never does a gaffer get the spotlight. Never right. does you know a concept artist get the spotlight. It's very rare. So those are the kind of people, like, I kind of want to bring on board and, you know, see how they contributed to the film. And again, like, to add to what you said, it's immortalizing them in some way, right? Immortalizing that knowledge. So okay.
So Akash, your latest short is coming, I think, in about a week. I think in
In a little under 2 weeks.
Yeah, so you, what I know, what I saw from the trailer is that it's described as a paradox from you, right? Temporal. Tell me about Temporal and what people can expect from Temporal.
Temporal was a project that came to us, you know, it wasn't originally a High School Junkies story. Like most of everything what we've done before, it's someone from within High School Junkies who's, you know, come up with the idea or whatever. And this came from outside, from Harindu Gunawardhan, who is actually the producer. I had known Harindu for a while. Like we met at Lanka Comic Con, and he used to cosplay, all that. And he comes from the advertising field. And we had spoken about, you know, working together, but nothing really ever materialized. And then he knew Kasun, he knew our cinematographer. And he had this idea that came to him one day, and he had pitched it over to Kasun. And Kasun told me, I can't go into spoiler, a little bit of spoiler territory here, because I'm assuming this episode is going to be released after the film is out. So Kasun said, you know, there's this time travel story that Harindu pitched, and he told me what it was. And I was like, okay, we wanted to do a time travel movie for a while, but we were about to shoot another little horror shot. So I was kind of busy with that. And I told Kasun, story is good. There are a few things that kind of need to be changed. So if you could, you know, just work on that separately, since it came from Harindu, just see what you can do. If you can come back, you know, after the stories, like after you guys have sorted the story out, let's see what, you know, let's see what we can pull off. Mm. He went back, and a month later, he comes back to me saying, I got a few guys together, and we, you know, created, like we took the same story and we kind of, we transformed it into something new. And he tells me the new story. And then I'm like, okay. Let's see, okay, I like it. I like it. Now we are talking. And this was somewhere around last June, I guess, and we were going into another lockdown. We were about to shoot that horror film like 2 days away, I think. And then there was another wave. So we decided to, you know, postpone that. And somehow we got into, you know, got into working on Temporal. It didn't have a title back then. We had a concept for a feature film, and we called that Temporal. So Harindu came up with the outline, you know, he created an outline of the story, and he sent it over to me, and I was like, okay, let me see what I can do. And I took the story, and since the whole the logic of it was created and the skeleton was done, I didn't really have to worry too much about the logical aspect of it or the storytelling too much. I could be creative with the storyline, with the narrative, and I put my creative stuff into it, and I tried to make it as human as I tried to make it a more human storyline. And from that point onwards, we started working little by little on it, and it ended up being the biggest project that we had done. I mean, Harindu, he provided us with all the necessary resources. And we worked with so many new people this time, because we weren't sure whether it was actually going to end up being a High School Junkies project. So like a lot of new people worked on this. Like we had a separate department from Junkie at Piripit, where the students who had come onto our courses could experience what it was like working on a film set. We got so many people on board this, and we spent around 4 months in prep again. Around 4 months. And this was, you know, we shot this in 3 days. It should have been six. Because when you take into account like the complexity of this project, plus we were shooting with red cameras for not the first time. We had shot with red cameras on a project previously, but this time it was like, you know, we kind of miscalculated the time that we would take. We would need to pull it off. But somehow we ended up shooting it within 3 days, and the complexity of the project just kept on increasing. I mean, we shot this with the idea, all right, that's VFX gonna come in, and then we took it over to Wayanga, who was the VFX artist. He came up with various suggestions, and you know, the VFX also kept on increasing. So whenever something's delayed or whenever we realize we need more time, it's always been for the better. And I've been telling Harindu, all right, you know what, man, like we need a little bit more time to complete this, to complete that, because everyone's brought their A game onto this project, brought 110%. And I've been spending the last 3-4 months on post-production nearly every day on this project. So we need to get this out there. Like we need to do the ultimate best that we can. And I don't want to leave a single thing hanging. So we brought, and eventually it ended up becoming High School Junkies project in collab, you know, in association with Harindu's banner, Harindu Gunavandra Pictures. So we are doing, it's like a joint venture. It's going to go up on the High School Junkies channel. It ended up becoming a High School Junkies production. And we got people, you know, who had worked with us before. We involved them in the post-production process as well. And like right now, we are wrapping up post-production. Shinik created another amazing track. And yeah, we have Romain Willis and Ravi J. Ravi J is coming back again for the ending titles. And Romain Willis is, you know, this is the first collaboration between the two of them. This is the first collaboration between like so many people. So I'm really excited about this. We are going to have a premiere, hopefully in 2 weeks' time, a cinema premiere, and it's going to release on the 19th of February. So it's been a long journey, because Harindu's always wanted to do feature films at the same time, and so have we. And we kind of realized like this is going to be like hopefully the last short film that we're going to do. And like we need to move on to features, so this is kind of like a calling card to for us. And hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, we have feature films being worked on, so we're hoping we can start shooting one after Emperor. But yeah, really excited for this project.
Right. So Akash, what's your message to the viewers of this video and listeners of this podcast?
Subscribe to Channa podcast, because he's bringing, like, you know, he's got awesome people coming on the show. To be honest, yeah, do subscribe. In terms of filmmaking, you know, it's not the equipment like we were talking about before. It's not necessarily the resources. Everyone has a smartphone, which is like a walking studio in your pocket, and if you want to tell a story, you got to start where you are. And if you can't start with what you have where you are, you're not going to do it, no matter how much resources you're going to get. So start where you are, and, you know, like take that first step, and always put your stories out there. Like get it seen by people, because that's what you want. And don't think that any story is, you know, insignificant. And don't stick to the same thing that's been done before. Try to experiment as much as you can. And if world cinema has shown us anything in the past 3-4 years, it's that content doesn't always have to be in English for the whole world to accept. Like you have so many series like Money Heist, Squid Game, like, you know, so much. And subtitles, it's a thing that people are accepting more and more. And you can tell authentic stories in whatever language you want to, like stories which are unique to where, you know, whatever region you are located in. And those stories can only be told by you. So just start where you are, reach out to other people, build that network, but use it. You use that network and just take that first step. Just do it. Mm. That's what I gotta say.
Right. Anybody you want to shout out to?
Shout out to the whole team. Shout out to, you know, the whole High School Junkies team. Every single person who's worked with us. I mentioned the 4 members on the team. We have around 25 or more people working on any given project at the same time. So couldn't have done it without them. Shout out to my folks. Still doing it because of them. Shout out to the good friends and family. And yeah, man, shout out to you for having me on the show. This has been amazing. it's a good break away from, you know, working on temporal. These are right. Like, in monotonous. This is a good change. So thanks, man.
it's always, you know, as a person who does the interviews and stuff, it's always feel, I don't know, it's a different experience when somebody else is asking you questions.
Yeah, right? It's different when you're on the other side of the interview.
Yeah, I've done a couple of them and it feel weird, but I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
So Akash, thanks for joining the podcast and looking forward to the temporal and all the great things that you're going to do afterwards. And lastly, tell everybody how they can follow you and how they can watch your movies and where.
Yeah, so you want to watch the movies? We are High School Junkies on all social media, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. I am Official Akash SK on Instagram, Facebook too, I think. Yeah, and Junkyard Theory at Junkyard Theory pretty much everywhere. You can just go visit our sites, highschooljunkies.com and junkyardtheory.com. And yeah, that's where you can find us. So just hit us up.
Thanks, Akash. So have a great day ahead.
Thanks, and you too, man. Thank you. Great to be on the podcast.